So we're reading from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 3, verses 6, 7, and 8. So you've got 7 and 8 on the board. I was told 6, 7, and 8. I will read verse 6 myself. First, this one has no purport, so I'll just read through it quickly and then we can go on to the next verse. Translation: the Kinaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. And the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. So this verse is describing... this is just before Lord Krishna appears. The previous verses were describing all the auspicious signs and the beautiful atmosphere on the planet Earth. And this verse is describing the heavenly planets, that all the inhabitants of the various planets, heavenly planets, they were... Some of them were singing, some of them were offering auspicious prayers, and some of them were dancing. So we'll go on to the next verse. Translation: the demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Brahma Sanhita 5.37, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabis Tabirya Eva Nijarupa Tayakalabi Goloka Eva Nivasatya Kilatmabhuto Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This verse indicates that Krishna and his entourage are of the same spiritual potency, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Krishna's father, his mother, his friends, the cowherd boys, and the cows are all expansions of Krishna, as will be explained in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. When Brahma took away Krishna's associates to test the supremacy of Lord Krishna, the Lord expanded himself again in the forms of the many cowherd boys and calves, all of whom, as Brahma saw, were Vishnu Murtis. Devaki is also an expansion of Krishna, and therefore this verse says, Devakyam Devarupinyam Vishnu Savaguhashaya. At the time for the Lord's appearance, the great sages and the demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore there was the sound of mild waves, and above the sea there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who is residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night, because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition. So by the grace of Krishna, he could appear as a full moon to welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The waning moon became a full moon in jubilation. Instead of Deva Rupinyam, some texts of Srimad Bhagavatam clearly say Vishnu Rupinyam. In either case, the meaning is that Devaki has the same spiritual form as the Lord. The Lord is Satchitananda Vigraha, and Devaki is also Satchitananda Vigraha. Therefore, no one can find any fault in the way the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Satchitananda Vigraha, appeared from the womb of Devaki. Those who are not in full knowledge that the appearance and disappearance of the Lord are transcendental, Janma Karma Chame Divyam, are sometimes surprised that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can take birth like an ordinary child. Actually, however, the Lord's birth is never ordinary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is already situated within the core of everyone's heart as Antaryami, the Supersoul. Thus, because he was present in full potency in Devaki's heart, he was also able to appear outside her body. One of the 12 great personalities is Bhishma Dev, Svayambhur, Narada, Sambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Prahlada, Janako, Bhishma. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.42, Bhishma, a great authority to be followed by devotees, says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in the core of everyone's heart, just as the sun may be on everyone's head. Yet although the sun may be on the heads of millions and millions of people, this does not mean that the sun is variously situated. Similarly, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead has inconceivable potencies, he can be within everyone's heart and yet not be situated variously. Ekat vam anupashya ta, Ishapanishad 7. The Lord is one, but he can appear in everyone's heart by his inconceivable potency. Thus, although the Lord was within the heart of Devaki, he appeared as her child. According to the Vishnu Purana, therefore, as quoted in the Vaishnava Toshani, the Lord appeared like the sun, anugraha saya. The Brahma Samhita 5.35 confirms that the Lord is situated even within the atom, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He is situated in Mathura, in Vaikuntha, and in the core of the heart. Therefore, one should clearly understand that he did not live like an ordinary child in the heart or the womb of Devaki, nor did he appear like an ordinary human child, although he seemed to do so in order to bewilder asuras like Kamsa. The asuras wrongly think that Krishna took birth like an ordinary child and passed away from this world like an ordinary man. Such asuric conceptions are rejected by persons in knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san. Bhagavad Gita 4.6. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is Aja, unborn, and he is the supreme controller of everything. Nonetheless, he appeared as the child of Devaki. This verse describes the inconceivable potency of the Lord, who appeared like the full moon. Understanding the special significance of the appearance of the Supreme Godhead, one should never regard him as having taken birth like an ordinary child. Om Gyana Timirandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasme Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very special verse, set of two verses, about the appearance of Krishna. So although today is not yet Janmashtami, we are already describing here the appearance of Krishna, the very auspicious appearance of the Lord. And it's beautifully described here how he appeared in the darkness of the night. Like the full moon rising. from the womb of Devaki, and from the heart of Devaki. So, so Prabhupada, in the purport first, he quotes this verse from the Brahma Samhita, Ananda Chinmayara Sa Pratibhavita Abhis. And he describes how that Krishna and all of his confidential associates are the same spiritual potency. And this is called the Chit Shakti. And they have a pure spiritual bodies made of the same spiritual substance. So this verse that Prabhupada quotes at the beginning of the purport from the Brahma Samhita, I'll just read the translation of that quickly. This is the translation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm Gokula with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency, possessed of the 64 artistic activities in the company of her confidants, Sakis, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever-blissful spiritual rasa. So, this verse is... it's translated by Bhaktisiddhanta specifically in relation with Radharani and the gopis. And interestingly, there's another translation by Srila Prabhupada that is actually different. And this is, it's in the purport of the second canto, 6th chapter, verse 22. And Prabhupada translates the same verse as in a more simple way. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, the one who enlivens the senses of everyone by his personal bodily rays, resides in his transcendental abode called Goloka. Yet he is present in every nook and corner of his creation by expansion of happy spiritual rays, equal in power to his personal potency of bliss. Yes, Prabhupada says happy spiritual rays. So, this is describing how Krishna appears in the same way. His associates are all made of the same potency, all have that same spiritual potency. And that's how Prabhupada explains how Krishna can appear from the womb of Devaki. So the whole purport is really about this, explaining how it is that Krishna can appear and how that this appearance is not ordinary, is not like the birth of an ordinary child from the womb of a mother. So even though he appears to be born from a mother, but it is not an ordinary event. It is not like in the same way that people give birth in the material world. So both the conception and the birth are totally spiritual. And it's described in the previous chapter of the 10th canto when Krishna appeared in the mind of Vasudeva, and from the mind of Vasudeva he was transferred to the mind of Devaki. And then Devaki illuminated the entire atmosphere in the prison because she was carrying the Supreme Lord in her heart and in her womb. But when we say in her womb, it's not like the Lord was trapped in that womb like ordinary living entities. They are trapped in the womb of the mother for 9 months. So Krishna, he was not trapped in that womb like that. He was present there, but but in his own spiritual body. So he was in the womb, he was in the heart, he was in the atmosphere. So Krishna is everywhere, and he's not subject to material laws of nature. So there's a lot of nice points in this purport that Prabhupada makes in this regard. First of all, about the Chitshakti, Bhaktisiddhanta, in the purport to that verse from the Brahma Samhita, he says that the Lord Absolute and His potency are one and the self-same existence, but they exist eternally as separate entities, as Radha and Krishna. So he's talking about Radha Krishna being the same, but still eternally separate. And how he divides his chit potency into thousands of gopis. So in the same way, there are thousands of cowherd boys, and there's his mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, and Nanda and Yashoda. So because there are three potencies, the chit shakti is the internal or spiritual potency. The Maya Shakti is the external or material potency, and the Jiva Shakti is the marginal potency. So the difference between the eternal associates of the Lord and ordinary aspiring devotees like ourselves is that we can fall down, but they never fall down into the material. They can never be affected by the material energy. They never leave Krishna's pastimes. They are eternally there with Krishna, because he's created them out of his own body to enjoy pastimes with him. So they are eternally liberated souls, nitya siddha. And Bhaktisiddhanta also says in the purport that in the realm of Vaikuntha, there is no rasa of parental affection. But in Goloka, there is the appearance of parental affection. There isn't really parenthood. So because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he doesn't take birth, and he doesn't have parents in an ordinary way. They're not really his parents in the way that we would understand parents, because there's no occurrence of birth. But they have that sentiment. He says that it is the original sentimental, egoistic assumption of that rasa. So for the purpose of the realization of the rasa, the assumed egoistic sentiment is there, as described by Bhaktisiddhanta, but it is, however, eternal. So in the rasa of parental affection, the sentiments of Nanda and Yashoda that they are parents becomes manifest in a more tangible form in the pastimes of birth, etc. So, of course, as we know, Krishna was, he took birth in the prison with Vasudeva and Devaki, and then he was transferred to Vrindavan, where he appeared to be the son of Nanda and Yashoda. So he had two sets of parents, one in Mathura and one in Vrindavan. So because the eternal associates of the Lord have a spiritual body, so even when they're in this world also, they have a spiritual body, just like Krishna. And they come down from the spiritual world to accompany him in the performance of his pastimes. So because Devaki is an eternal associate of the Lord, she has the same spiritual substance of body as him, Satchitananda Vigraha. So And it's interesting also that Prabhupada says that instead of Deva Rupanyam, some texts of Srimad Bhagavatam say Vishnu Rupanyam. So they're both the same. The Deva Rupanyam, which is the form of the pure devotee, is the liberated associate of the Lord, is the same, is of the same substance as the Vishnu Rupa. So therefore it's sometimes said Vishnu Rupanyam. And Prabhupada also talks about how Bhishmadev in the first canto, ninth chapter, says that even though the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, he's not situated variously, but he still remains one. He still remains one person, but he is situated in everyone's heart. And he is situated in all the atoms, and he permeates everything, everywhere. So these are some of the inconceivable potencies of the Lord, which are worth meditating on. And so he appears to be born just to bewilder the asuras, like Kamsa. So this famous verse from the Gita, chapter 4, verse 9, which is also mentioned here, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tattvata chakvadeham puna janma naiti mameti sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, Arjuna. So this is a very important verse in this relation, because it's only by understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's birth and his activities that we can become liberated, that we can go back home to Krishna. So that's why it's very, very important to understand this, and this is the essence, if you like, of Janmashtami, to remember Krishna's pastimes and to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes. So the theme for these classes, these lead-up classes to Janmashtami, is evoking the joy of Janmashtami and remembrance of Sri Krishna in our daily lives. So about the joy of Janmashtami, Devaki was very joyful because the Lord was present in her heart. So in the same way, we could say that the more we maintain awareness of his presence, the more we become also illuminated and joyful, just like Devaki was illuminated by Krishna's presence in her heart. And the joy of Janmashtami comes from actually from being absorbed in devotional service. Why do we feel joyful on Janmashtami? Because it's Janmashtami, of course. It's a very special day. Krishna's mercy is flowing, and it's a very, very auspicious day, celebrating and remembering the appearance of Krishna. But also we become joyful by engaging in devotional service. We fast and we engage in so many services. So even when it's not Janmashtami, when we are fully engaged in devotional service, that's how we become joyful. And like Krishna says in the Gita, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pravitam, Paramam, Pamam, Shushukam Kartam Avyam, he says, that is joyfully performed. This Raja Vidya, the king of knowledge, Krishna consciousness, Bhakti Yoga, is joyfully performed. So by keeping engaged in Krishna consciousness, we can experience that joy of Janmashtami any time of the year by remembering Krishna and by serving him. So Janmashtami is, in itself, it's special. It's like a, you could say, like a booster shot of Krishna consciousness to prepare us for another year of remembering Krishna more and more every day. And so how do we remember Krishna in our day-to-day lives, is the question. So Krishna consciousness means remembering Krishna. For someone who is Krishna conscious, it's not difficult to remember Krishna, because Krishna consciousness means remembering Krishna. So if we are Krishna conscious, it's not difficult to remember Krishna, it's actually difficult to forget him. Because if we remember that Krishna is in our hearts, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda, Jai Shri Shri Sitaramakshan Hanuman, Jai Shri Shri Gonitai. He is here in his deity form, giving us his darshan. And he is also in our hearts, and he is also everywhere. So if we really understand that Krishna is everywhere, in the heart of everyone, then how can we forget about him? He's all around us. He's in everything. How can we not remember him? How can we forget about him? Well, we forget about him because that's the influence of Maya, of course. Because this material world is Maya's kingdom. She's in charge here, and her job is to try to make us forget about Krishna, to test us, to train us by dangling so many temptations in front of us, to try to make us forget Krishna, to test how well that we can learn to remember Krishna. So that is our formidable enemy. And we always have a choice between Krishna and Maya. But because we're in the material world, Maya is kind of like the default setting. So we actually need to make an effort to remember Krishna. And Prabhupada has given us a process based on the 9 processes of bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. And regarding this, the verse where these 9 processes are described and prescribed. This is spoken by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. There's something very interesting that Prabhupada says in the purport of that. He says that the 9 different processes enunciated by Prahlad Maharaj, who learned them from Narada Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. If a devotee performs only one of these 9 without deviation, he can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But something else he says, I mean, that maybe we've already heard that before, but there's something else he says which explains why it is that only by performing one of these activities we can actually attain perfection. And Prabhupada says sometimes it's found that when one performs one of these processes, other processes are mixed with it. That is not improper for a devotee. So when a devotee executes any one of the 9 processes, this is sufficient, and the other 8 processes are included. So what it means in a sense is that they can't be separated from each other. They're all these 9 processes of devotional service, they all work together, they all support each other, and they're all mixed together. Like, for example, when we're chanting, we're also hearing, we're also remembering. And by serving, by doing deity worship, then we're also remembering Krishna, or we're chanting. So in this way, they all get mixed together. So even if we give a priority to one, which may be particularly powerful for us, then still we get the benefit of all of them, because they all work together. They're all included in each other. So these nine processes of bhakti are very special. And the more we become advanced in Krishna consciousness, the more effortless it becomes to remember Krishna. So until we reach the highest stage of Krishna consciousness, we have to make an effort. As we know, that's the process of sadhana bhakti. We have to make an effort to get up early in the morning and to chant our rounds, which help us to remember Krishna. Oh, even for those devotees who are in advanced stages, they still do a lot of these things, like getting up early, chanting. That's for beginners and for advanced stage, but it's just that in the beginning it's more of a hard work, and in advanced stages it's more natural and spontaneous for devotees to do that. And about chanting, it's important to remember that Krishna, we know that Krishna is always present in his name. But to actually experience the presence of Krishna in his name, we have to chant without offense. So it's very important to avoid offenses, and especially, for example, to avoid criticizing devotees. The neophyte devotee sees Krishna only in the deity, but the advanced devotee sees Krishna everywhere and in the heart of everyone. So by seeing Krishna in the heart of everyone, we can always remember Krishna, and we can serve Krishna by serving others. So when we are serving other devotees, that is non-different from serving Krishna, because Krishna is in the heart of the devotee. And therefore, a devotee doesn't see friends and enemies. And like, for example, there are many different opinions. As we know, in ISKCON, there are many different opinions. There are controversial topics, and devotees have different opinions about different topics. And sometimes there seem to be camps forming. The more advanced stage is that we need to see that even if someone has a different opinion from us, we don't become inimical to that person. We don't take it personally. We still respect them, and we still have a normal relationship with them. So actually, we have to be careful. Sometimes it happens. You can see a lot of this goes on in social media as well, which can get sometimes unpleasant, that devotees, they have different opinions, and then they clash and they argue, and which really shouldn't be going on in a Vaishnava community. So it's very important for us to grow up and see that, okay, we're all individuals, we have different opinions, but we are all Prabhupada's family, and we should always maintain our respect and for all devotees, and affection and kindness to all devotees, because we are all Prabhupada's family. The Madhyama Bhakta, he extends kindness and friendship to all devotees and to all people in general, and tries to bring people closer to Krishna. So, and this is what pleases Krishna the most, is when we reach out to people, whether it's through doing Sankirtan, Harinam, book distribution, prasadam distribution, or whether it's preaching online, whether it's interacting with the people we meet. The compassionate devotee is always trying to give Krishna to others, trying to bring others closer to Krishna. And this is the best way to please Krishna, to please Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. And the best way to remember Krishna and to be joyful, because we're talking about extending the joy. And the joy actually comes from preaching. I mean, this big festival here at the Manor is meant to bring people here, to bring people closer to Krishna. So in the same way, on other days of the year, we go out or we reach out to people that we meet and we try to bring them closer to Krishna. And this is where the joy really comes, because that makes Krishna happy. And when Krishna's happy, then we become happy. And a compassionate and broad-minded devotee will find ways and means to attract all kinds of people to Krishna consciousness. And this may mean that we shouldn't try to impose another culture on them. Because if we want people to respect our culture, we should also respect their culture. We can't expect people to respect our culture unless we respect their culture. Okay, we may feel that our culture is superior, the Vedic culture is superior, maybe that's true, but that's not the message we want to be giving to people, because it's not really going to sit well with people if we try to, say, oh, our culture is better than yours, you should do what we do, what you're doing is rubbish. They're not really going to, be impressed by that, they're not really going to be attracted by that kind of attitude, So we really need to be able to, in a mature way, reach out to people, empathize with people, put ourselves in other people's shoes, and try to see how we can attract them. And it doesn't have to be through culture, because the culture is external. You know, things like the dress and the music and all these things are eternal. I mean, external. We could say they're spiritual, maybe they're not, that's another subject for debate, but they're definitely external. And the real message that we want to give to people, the real thing that we need to be giving, as Prabhupada said, is the spiritual science, because Krishna consciousness is a spiritual science and it's meant for everyone. So we need to be able to rack our brains to find ways and means to present this, the essence of Krishna consciousness to people. Like, first of all, the difference between matter and spirit, the difference between the soul and the body, it starts with that. And whatever kind of science or philosophy that people are maintaining, we need to be able to relate with that. We need to be able to have a narrative with that. We need to educate ourselves so that we can educate others in a broad-minded way that will include their culture, and that will include the basics of modern science and modern philosophy, to be aware of what kind of mindsets people have and what kind of barriers that may be stopping them from taking up Krishna consciousness, how to negotiate those barriers. So this is very, very important. Once we've given those basics, then the rest will follow. Is my time up, or do I have a few more minutes? Yeah. Okay, I'll just speak for a few more minutes and then we can open up to questions. Is that okay? Okay, so I was just going to say that by always remembering Krishna, we become peaceful and happy, because we know that he is looking after us and we have nothing to worry about. The impersonalists, they experience the Brahman effulgence of the Lord to find the peace, but they cannot find love there, because they are not interacting with the personality of the Lord. Without surrender, there is no joy, because they cannot free themselves from ego, competition, and envy. And yogis who meditate on the supersoul in the heart also cannot find love, because while they do acknowledge the personality of the Lord, they do not serve him. They take without giving. If you're in a relationship with someone and you take without giving, that relationship is going to be a non-starter, where there's no reciprocation, there's no juice, no rasa, no love. And these impersonalists and aspiring yogis, they're not just in India, they're all around us. If that were not so, Prabhupada would not have composed this mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarina, in his pranam mantra, which means to deliver the Western countries from impersonalism and voidism. So this is all around us. Atheism, agnosticism, scientism, and so-called Buddhism. And the tendencies are also can be within us, so we have to watch out for that. So the remembrance of Krishna and seeing Krishna everywhere must be imbued with devotion in order to satisfy the soul. So remembrance of Krishna means not just remembering his impersonal energy, not just remembering his presence everywhere, but also remembering most of all his personality, and remembering him with devotion. So this remembrance is prayerful, loving, with surrender, with an open heart, with a desire to learn and understand, with a readiness to be guided and directed, with faith and trust, and with a willingness to change and be molded to become an instrument of the Lord. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there, and if anyone has any question or comment, now's the time.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your interesting class. I want to pick up on a few points, which you mentioned about like dress may or may not be spiritual, but either way it's external. So here's my question. I mean, take Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right? So he wrote the Krishna Samhita. And what he did was, he took parts of the Bhagavatam, like oceans of milk and hellish planets, and he said, you know, you can treat that as, you don't have to treat that as being actually true. What he was doing, he was preaching to the intellectuals of Bengal who had been influenced by the British. So he preached. They were like Adunakavad, they called it modern philosophy. So what he's done is, he's changed the philosophy, made it palatable to Western intellectuals with a Western way of thinking. And that was his preaching strategy. So I'm wondering, how far can we take that? How much of the philosophy can we take away and people will still take it? For example, you mentioned impersonalism, Buddhism. There's a lot of this in the world. Is it possible for us to say, this mantra, it works? And because some people will be thinking, well, you know, I don't believe in Krishna, this blue boy with two arms and the flute. I think that's just all figurative. But there must be some substance behind the whole thing. And maybe this mantra is the substance. And I'm happy to chant the mantra, but I'm not prepared to accept Krishna as some blue boy with a flute. And is it possible to take Krishna, the form of Krishna, the actual existence of Krishna, out of Krishna consciousness, give people the mantra, and then they can actually benefit from chanting the mantra? Or is that going too far? Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's basically taken parts of the Bhagavatam and just, you know, scored them out, in effect.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting question. We have to learn to adapt for people and give people as much as they can digest, in other words. People have different levels of appetite, Krishna consciousness. So people do benefit from chanting the mantra, the Maha Mantra, even if they don't believe that Krishna is God, or even if they don't believe in God. But I think that benefit is limited also, in the sense that if it's not going to bring them to Krishna, if it's not going to connect them with Krishna, then they can only go so far. But I think we can do in phases. I mean, it has to be adapted to groups or to individuals according to what they can understand and what they can accept. So it has to be a gradual process, and we just have to work out different ways and means to do this. So there's plenty of work for us to do. That's what I could say.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class, these wonderful verses, and you're talking about devotional activities. But somehow I felt in the 70s there was a special record that came out. And certainly it was the Hare Krishna record, and it went into the hit parade. And that to me was like the start of, you could say, devotional life, because it was a very joyful record, and somehow or other, just the sound of that record was just something totally different at that time for me. I was at the pop festival on the Isle of Wight at that time, 1970, I think it was. And certainly, I feel that actually was the start of me becoming connected with Krishna consciousness, the very attractive nature. And that was like George Harrison's assistance, by bringing Krishna consciousness to the people. And Prabhupada really encouraged George Harrison in that way, to use the media in such a way that it would bring them to Krishna consciousness. And so he was asked to stay in his position, but to use his position as to communicate Krishna consciousness as a popular figurehead, if you get what I mean, for the culture of that time, and thereafter too. I think there is ways, and certainly, but we don't want to lose the original teachings, you know, as devotees, and go into such a thing that somehow veganism becomes the thing, and all these things that creep in. Because at the end of this age, if we're not careful, there's no cows because they're not needed. You can have vitamins instead. And so we got to be careful of bringing in what we call maybe vegetarianism or veganism into the movement to spread Krishna consciousness. I think it's somehow it's deviating people, and certainly at the moment somehow this vegan culture seems to be taking off because of the general state of the meat industry or whatever's there. So I think we got to be careful, because it seems to be taking into account save your spiritual life with veganism. I saw one of the leaflets they were giving out here. You know, it's, but there's, for those people who want to do that, there's not a place for cows except in the material. If you want a world without cows, that's in this material existence. It'll suit your sentiment. A world will be created if we're not careful.
Okay, but it's not an either or. Yeah. You know, it's not like
no.
I mean, we can accept both. It's not that veganism is like heathenism or something. You know,
it's true.
I mean, I think we should be happy that people are giving up meat eating, and that's a great step forward.
Yes, absolutely.
And if some people don't want to take dairy products, I think that's, you know, that's the free choice.
Yes.
And But of course, at the same time, I mean, I get your point that we don't want cow protection to be... We don't want all the cows to disappear. So that's why the cow protection and Hingsa dairy and all this is also important to develop. So both of them side by side can be done.
I see what you mean. Thank you.
Isn't it, there's one suggestion, I think, isn't it, in relation to the Prabhu's question, isn't the Uttama Adhikara is eligible or able to make a change or make some adjustment at any time, in any situation, with anything given to him?
Do you mean the Madhyama Adhikara?
The Madhyama Adhikara, yeah.
You said Uttama.
Sorry.
Can make adjustment.
Let me rephrase. The top class devotee, Uttam Avikar, the topmost devotee, he's able to make an adjustment at any time, anywhere, in any circumstance. So that's the difference. They're able to do that, but someone like me, I'm not able to do that. I'm not able to make
an adjustment. The Madhyama Adhikara can also do that, the preacher. The preacher can do that too. We don't have to wait until we are, you know, on the Krishna Prema, you know, liberated souls to make adjustment. We've all got, you know, Krishna's given us some brain, some common sense, and he wants us to use that in his service. So but we have to just be very careful how we do it, because it's important to distinguish between the principles and details. So the main principles, the philosophy, these things cannot be adjusted, but details, they can be adjusted. So as long as we see the difference, as long as we understand that difference, then we can make adjustments in consultation with other devotees. Okay.
Yeah. Good.
The microphone.
What do you think about prasadam distribution as a way of preaching? Because, I mean, when I was living in Spain, for us it was very easy to give prasadam, and people will take it very easily. But the books will be hard. I mean, some people will take books, but not everyone. But, I mean, thinking like going Harinams in Madrid, or even in the Ratha Yatra, the prasadam will go super fast, but the books, some people won't take it, some people won't. So it's like, it was like the impression that the prasadam was preparing the heart for the books. Some people are ready for the books, but some people are just not ready. They need the prasadam first. I mean, it's just my hum. It's a question. I really don't know. What can you tell us about that, please?
Yes, that's a good point. That it can work in that way. So prasadam distribution, it's easy because everyone likes to eat nice food. And so by eating nice food, they get some purification. But they don't get the ultimate knowledge. So in order to get the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, they need to get books. And not just to get the books, but they need to read the books. So, and then they need to... learn from devotees, hear from devotees as well. So there are all these different stages. And so all these activities that Prabhupada gave us need to be maintained. And and then the ultimate success is when someone actually understands the philosophy and becomes a devotee. Then that's the success. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna.